Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, this special championship edition of the Cyril Quinn Review Primetime as we discuss tonight's final college basketball game of the season, the national championship between UConn and Kentucky. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. We'll take you for the next half hour as we kind of break down what tonight's action could look like. We'll also talk about the Shabazz Napier comments that I just saw about an hour ago. Very interesting comments about about the college student athlete life, to say the least. So we'll talk about that. Javon Alford will join us to break down again, get his thoughts on what could happen tonight. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can hit me up at Twitter, follow me on Twitter at William Gerald, or go to my website, SurrealGeraldQuinn.com, or find me on Facebook.com/SurrealQuinn. So, Surreal Gerald Quinn. So, I'm a lot of places that you can find me on. I want to begin with UConn. And the reason why I want to begin with UConn, all due respect to Kentucky, it's Kentucky. You know, 8 national championships, more college basketball wins than any school in the country in college basketball history. 8 off rub. I mean, we know Kentucky, and we know what Kentucky is all about, and what Kentucky has been all about for, any number of years. But what UConn is doing and has done over the last 15 years is remarkable, considering the fact that they, there was no history before Jim Calhoun got there with UConn basketball. None. There was no history, like some places like North Carolina or like Indiana or like Kentucky. Calhoun basically built a school and built a basketball program from scratch. Okay. They basically took on, it's very similar to Florida State, a team that I grew up rooting for. Very similar because it was like, and I even say it's even more difficult because at least Florida State had the advantage of being in the state of Florida. Like UConn is Connecticut. How many All-Americans have you seen come out of the state of Connecticut as far as high school All-Americans? How many top players are coming from the state of Connecticut? I mean, let's be honest. So it's kind of like Florida State, but Florida State from the standpoint of basically Calhoun took anytime, anywhere approach in terms of where, we'll play whoever, we'll go to the Big East, we're going to recruit. The New York kids. We're gonna get the New York kids, and really, I mean, that's where they're. I mean, that's like their second home, their home states, like New York, in terms of their recruiting base. So to see where the program is at, and let's be honest, since 1999, Connecticut has been the program in college basketball. This will be their fourth title appearance. They're 7-1 in the Final Four lifetime, 3-0 in championship games. And they have more championship appearances than any school in college basketball since 1999. And again, they churn out, a number of NBA players. But the last couple of years, the last two championship teams that they've had, they haven't been a who's list of McDonald's All-Americans. It just hasn't. And, you know, again, UK, you know, Kentucky, before the tournament started, before the season started, preseason number one, they finally got together and got hot at the right time and have, but let's be honest, Kentucky, as remarkable of a turnaround it is for Kentucky, they still have about at least six, maybe even seven future NBA players on their team. At least, maybe, I'd say minimum five. How many does Connecticut have? Yeah, Napier and who else? Maybe DeAndre Daniels. Maybe. Possibly in the future. Maybe he could, you know, if he puts on some weight, he could be like a stretch four. So for Connecticut to be here, especially, you know, replacing Jim Calhoun. I mean, you look at the job Kevin Ollie's done. Kevin Ollie, to me, has been the coach of the tournament. In regards to, unless he just goes out there and just, you know, I don't know what he could do to mess it up. It is a championship game, but he has been the, every button Kevin Ollie has pushed, you know, he's had the Midas touch in this tournament. Again, takes over for a legend. Last year, the team was 20-10, coming off, you know, no postseason play, no Big East tournament, no NCAA tournament, still goes 20-10. And then this year, you know, they had a very good year, but nothing spectacular from in terms of anybody thinking that anybody think that they could be a legit championship contender. And here they now stand in the Final Four. Again, this is not great. They don't have great talent on that team. They have good guards, excellent defensively, but they're fundamentally sound. They make their free throws. They don't turn over the ball. And they are a much better offensive team than what you think. They're a much better offensive team than what they get credit for. Connecticut, UConn, I mean, Connecticut, Kentucky in the national championship game, the highest combined seeds in NBA and NCAA tournament history as far as that, as in championship history, a 7 versus an 8. First time ever, if Connecticut wins, it'll be the first time ever that a 7 has won the national championship. Of course, Villanova won the national championship as the number 8 seed. And I'll say one thing. You know, the committee is taking a lot of heat about the seedings. You know what? They got it right. I mean, let's be honest. Because, you know, everybody's saying, oh, Kentucky wasn't an 8 seed. Who did Kentucky beat other than Louisville, non-conference? Who did they beat? I mean, they lost North Carolina, lost to Michigan State, lost to Florida 3 times, where he had an okay record with 12-6 in a bad SEC. I mean, they lost to Arkansas twice. Lost to South Carolina. I mean, their resume warranted a number 8 seed. Now, maybe their talent didn't warrant a number 8 seed, but their resume warranted a number 8 seed. I don't care about the BPI. The BPI was supposed to measure your top 5 or, you know, if you were missing a player, I don't care about that. That's a bunch of garbage. It's a way to just crunch some more numbers. I mean, please, give me a break. It's no different than the ERPI. Might even be worse. We care less about the BPI. The BPI says they should have been no lower than a 4. Based on what? Who did they beat to be a 4 seed? A 4 seed. Again, you're talking about their talent. You're not talking about their body of work. So, you know, look at, oh, Michigan State, Louisville, oh, where is Michigan State and where is Louisville right now? Where are they? And I picked Michigan State, I picked both of them to get to the Final Four. So I was high on them, but where are they? Neither one of those teams got to the Final Four. Louisville lost in the Sweet 16. So, yeah, the committee could have did some things right, but overall, I think the committee got it right. And I'm not a fan of some of these. I wasn't a fan. There have been times where they have gotten it wrong with some seedings. I mean, I remember Connecticut in 98 should not have been putting, well, not with the seedings, but should not have been putting in the same bracket as North Carolina, considering North Carolina was the number one overall seed, and I don't think Connecticut was even close to being the weakest number two. So sometimes, you know, sometimes they overstack a bracket. Sometimes teams, they do mess up seeds, but on this particular occasion, in this tournament, they got it right for the most part. They got it right. Kevin Ollie looking to become the first coach since Steve Fisher in 1989 to win a NCAA championship in his first go-around as a head coach. Of course, remember Steve Fisher took over in 89 after Bill Frieder was fired. I'm still trying to figure out why Bill Frieder was leaving Michigan for Arizona State, but, you know, whatever. I'm sure there was some decent reasons. But, yeah, he took over for Bill Frieder, won the national championship on one of the most ridiculous calls in NCAA tournament, in NCAA championship history. The, you know, the call, the phantom foul in overtime that sent Ramil Robinson to the line for two free throws, and Michigan, of course, one by one against a very good Seton Hall team. So you have Kevin Ollie trying to win his first title, and John Calipari going for championship number two in 3 years. Calipari turned his team around. He kind of went away with the dribble drive offense, not all the way, but kind of made some tweaks to it. I just think, and they keep saying, you know, we keep talking about hearing about this tweak, this magical tweak that he made, that Calipari made, that seemingly turned the season around. I just think everything, I really believe that everything just came together for him. I mean, I think that, you know, I think that it took a while with the five freshmen. I think guys just started just accepted their role. You know, some of the guys that they had on there last year who were starters and All-Americans kind of just accepted the fact that they were being their roles or their positions were being taken by freshmen. And I think just guys accepted their roles and found their niche. I don't think, I mean, this magical tweak or this magical changing of the offense, I mean, please. You tell me Calipari couldn't figure that out after watching countless hours of film, practice film, game film, that it took him until March to this magical tweak. I mean, he's been coaching for close to 30 years. He couldn't, I mean, come on, please. I'm sorry, I'm not buying this magical tweak that he made. I think their players, I think he's giving himself too much credit. From that standpoint, he's giving his players a lot of credit, but I think from that standpoint, he's giving himself too much credit, to be honest with you. Three four seven two one five six one eight zero. We're gonna have Javon Alford on in a couple of minutes, but before that, I'm gonna play you the Shabazz Napier audio from earlier today. If you didn't hear what he had to say, certainly you can tune in. Here's Shabazz Napier.
It's kind of great. Good for them. At the end of the day. To a certain point, you know, we as student athletes, get utilized for what we do so well, and we definitely, we're definitely blessed to get a scholarship to our universities. But at the end of the day, that doesn't cover everything. We do have hungry nights that we don't have enough money to get food, and sometimes, needed money is, money is needed. I don't think, you should stretch it out to hundreds of thousands of dollars for players. A lot of times guys don't know how to handle themselves for money. But I think, North Western has an idea, and we'll see where it goes.
Do you feel like an employee?
I just feel like a student athlete. And, sometimes, like I said, there's hungry nights when I'm not able to eat, but I still got to play up to my, capabilities, and sometimes it's that way. I don't see myself as so much of an employee, but when you see a jersey getting sold, it may not have the last name on it, but when you see a jersey getting sold, things like that, to some credit, you feel like you want something in return, and sometimes it feels that way. But like I said, I don't think you student athletes should get hundreds of thousands of dollars. There are hungry nights that I go to bed and I'm starving. So something can change, something should change, but if it doesn't, at the end of the day, we've been doing this for so long. So.
there you go. Shabazz Napier. And I'm telling you right now, if he doesn't make it to the NBA, which he will, but if he didn't make it to the NBA or his post-NBA career, he could possibly be a politician. Because he handled, listen, and before you call him out for being selfish or saying that, why is he talking about this the same day of the game, he had about a million cameras in his face, okay? Had about a million cameras, million microphones in his face, and all he did was answer the questions that he was asked. We'll get back to that. As a matter of fact, we'll ask Javon Alford about that. Here's Javon Alford, who covers LaSalle basketball, does some play-by-play for LaSalle basketball. Javon, of course, certainly will be tuned in tonight to tonight's national championship. Javon, how you doing, man?
Doing good. How about you?
I'm doing well, Javon. I'm looking forward to this matchup. So you have UConn's smalls versus Kentucky's bigs. From your perspective, which one will win out from your perspective? I'll put it to you this way. Which group is it more important that they play well?
Which one is more important that they play well? That's a tough one. But if you're UConn, you need your smalls to play huge tonight, because we've seen the smalls have got them every game this round, from St. Joe's when they were down with 1 minute left to getting overtime to beating Villanova, to beating Michigan State, to go this far. It's been on the small Shabazz Napier and those guys, and then when your smalls are playing good, then you can feed it down to your bigs, because now you're playing the outside in. You can get your inside-outside game going on. So out of the two, I think UConn's smalls need to play really good tonight if they want to win, because Kentucky right now, smalls and bigs right now, are both just on. They're clicking at the right time.
We saw UConn go to a lot of the small lineup against Florida. I mean, at one point, they almost had like four guards or even five guards on the floor. How do you see? I mean, we know Boatwright, Napier can be on the floor, but do you see them going to at times a three guard or four guard lineup, or do you see them being more cautious considering how dominant Kentucky could be on the backboard?
You might, since this is a national championship game, you got to go out all guns blazing. So you never know. You might see a four guard or three guard lineup out there on the court. Whichever way, you got to try to max Calipari, because, with UConn smalls with Napier and Boatwright, they definitely got the experience. This is the time. Napier's been in this position before. He knows what's the big light for a national championship game. And then you got them going against the backcourt mates with Young and the Harrison twins, They're young. They're freshmen. Will the bright lights get to them? That's going to be an interesting part. So I definitely think you could see a four. I don't think you'll see four guards, but I definitely think you'll see three to match up with Kentucky's young guards on the other side.
We know about Julius Randle. He'll be a top five pick if he chooses to come out, which I think he will. We know about Napier. Give me a player from each team that could tilt this in either UConn or Connecticut's direction. I mean, Connecticut or Kentucky's favor.
Okay.
That doesn't get talked about.
For Kentucky, I am going to have to say, I hope I don't get this twin's name wrong. I don't know which twin it is. Andrew Harrison. He hit the clutch shots, I think. It was Andrew, I believe.
I think it. I want to say, is it Aaron? I think Aaron's been making the big shots.
Uh-huh.
I think Aaron. I mean, you can check it. I think Aaron's been the one that's been making these last second 3-point shots.
And Andrew's the point, I believe. Right. Yeah.
I get them. I can't tell them apart to save my life. I'll be honest with you. I just see Harrison.
I think for Kentucky, it's going to come down to Aaron Harrison hasn't making the clutch stops, but I think it's going to come down to Andrew. Andrew's the point guard. He's going to be matched up with Shabazz Napier. It's going to be his big test. You know, people are saying is both Harrisons already first round draft picks. This is the time to improve for Kentucky and for UConn. I might have to say Daniels.
Yes.
I think Daniels is going to have to be that person that's going to have to give UConn the extra lift, you know, because I feel like both Wright and Napier are going to do the job. They're just going to – you always, when you have a game of this magnitude, you expect your big-time players to show up, but you always need that third guy, the guy that nobody expects to put up some ridiculous number, maybe a double-double, 20-10, 15-10, something along that line. To give you that extra edge, and I think Daniels could just be that person.
And the thing about Daniels, and I had that written down as Daniels being the X factor. He's a guy 6'9", you know, he's about 190, so he's very thin, but he could bring those bigs out. He could really stretch the floor and bring those bigs out of the lane with his 3-point shooting. I mean, he hit some huge threes in that Florida game. He really saved them in the first half of that Florida game when they couldn't do anything. Obviously, he had like 10 points in that half, and that really helped stabilize that game and to help them take the momentum into halftime, and they just took over the second half. So I thought he definitely was the MVP of that game. So I was wondering, like, he can really be a guy that can stretch the floor off those bigs like Randall. Those other guys might have to come out, and you could take at least one of those bigs away from the, you know, offensive boards. How about the coaching matchup? I think everybody would count, like, conventional wisdom would say, would give the edge to Calipari, third national championship. He's going for his second, been in the Final Four of three different teams. But I love what Kevin Ollie has done in terms of the moves and the buttons that he's been able to press. What about the coaching matchup?
You're right. A lot of people, the conventional wisdom will pick Calipari. You know, he's been there before. He's been in his position. He knows what happens in these type of games. He's the old guard. He knows what happens. But then you on the other side, you have Kevin Ollie. You know, he's astute. Kevin Ollie, for his NBA career, he always had that mindset of a teacher, a student of the game. And he learned at Calhoun. So he's seen these, just as much as John Calipari has seen this, Kevin Ollie has seen the same, almost the same amount of experience that Calipari has seen, but just from an assistant coach role. And I agree, he's done a tremendous job in this tournament because let's keep it real. If UConn didn't have that, I think with AYP, the Academic Yearly Progress or Performance thing last year, they could have been an NCAA tournament team last year.
Yes, very much so. They were 20-10 last year, had some good wins over Notre Dame, who was ranked Syracuse. So they were probably in a bubble team, but they easily could have been, depending. They didn't get to play in the Big East tournament, so maybe they could have added on two or three wins with that. Yeah, absolutely. I thought they had a very good year last year, considering the circumstances. So there's no question about that.
Right, and I definitely with that coming in, they didn't learn it from that experience last year, saying, you know, we did that good and we didn't have that chance. I think this is their chance now. And I think you have a coach in Kevin Ollie that's not going to get these guys rattled. Like, oh, my gosh, this is the big he's going to keep his guys cool. I want to see how Calipari's going to keep his guys under cool when you have so many freshmen in the clutch moments. Yeah, they've been clutch moments in the Elite Eight, in the Sweet 16, in the Final Four. But this is for the national championship, all the marbles. Can Calipari keep his guys under wraps? Because, as I said, Shabazz Napier has been through this position before, and he's the captain. He's the leader of this team. He'll keep his guys calm. But will Calipari be able to keep his team under pressure when there's 1 minute left in the game, tie ball game?
All right, we lost the connection here. John, you still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
All right. So we lost a connection here. Yeah, Kevin Ollie's been tremendous. I love what he said. I mean, looking at a team that when they got destroyed by Louisville in that tournament, he just kept the team morale up. you know, came out with some definitive statements. You saw what he said at halftime at one of those, I believe it was the second round game or third round game, said, you know, we're going to win this. So he seems to be kind of like that player's coach that the players seem to respond for and play hard for. How about, and I think this hasn't been talked about enough, how about from a tactical standpoint, he runs a lot of pro-style sets in terms of his offense. Is that throwing a lot of – do you see that throwing a lot of his opponents off in this tournament?
Yeah, definitely, because, a lot of these college coaches, they're not running the pro-style type of NBA offense in college. You know, it's very simple offense. You know, you got the Princeton offense, the backdoor cut, those kind of big stuff. No, Kevin Ollie's bringing a whole complex thing. Cut that those teams off, because a lot of these pro teams, Division I programs, a lot of these teams don't have NBA caliber players to match up with these type of movements. And I think with him doing these type of offenses and defenses, I think it really, it prepares his players, basically also because he was an NBA player, so he knows how these things are ran, and it definitely throws a wrench in teams' plans because they're thinking, well, how do I defend this? But is this play something that we've seen in college before? But if it's not, then how are we going to try to adjust? And I think that's where the game is going to also be won. Can make those second half adjustments after the first half.
How about Kentucky, Javon, as far as what was this now? You know, we've seen teams struggle in the regular season with a lot of talent. They get hot in the tournament. Something clicks. I mean, even UConn, maybe not as much back in 2011. They didn't have a great regular season, but they played well enough, but they got hot in the Big East tournament. We know Kemba Walker, and then all of a sudden carried it through to a national championship. I think it's kind of overrated. What was this? What do you see in terms of this magical tweak that John Calipari claims that he made? He's not going to come out and say what exactly he did, but are you buying that this magical tweak that he made in the offense, that all of a sudden that he makes that tweak and then guys just, the light switch turns on? What are your thoughts on in turn? I know you watched a lot of Kentucky basketball this year. What did you see that was the difference between the way they look now and how they were playing for the majority of the regular season?
I don't think there was a tweak, obviously. I think that they start playing team ball and not more worried about the headlines. Maybe they was worried about the headlines. Maybe about the headlines in the NBA draft. I'm being such and such. Maybe that was the reason. But I don't think there was no tweak. I believe that they started to play more as a team and team player and team ball and not everybody playing e-ball. I'm going to take the last shot. This and there, because as we said, we saw Kentucky at their worst this season. I mean, who could forget the tip back slam against Arkansas to end the game when there was nobody rebounding? Somebody should have picked that up. That's how you play team ball. You ain't seeing everybody playing team ball, sharing the ball, sharing the rock, make plays for each other instead of making plays for I. So I definitely think that's what's happening. I mean, it was eventually going to happen, but about time they finally started to get something clicking.
So last one, Javon, before we let you go, who do you like, and give me a score?
Ooh, this is hard. I'm going to go against everybody's champion, which is Kentucky, because they got the five freshmen claiming they did Fab Five. I'm going to go against that. I'm going to go UConn. I like the experience and leadership that they have behind Kevin Ollie and Shabazz Napier, and I think Napier this last time wants to go out as a two-time, getting his second championship and go out as a two-time national champion. And I score, I'm going to go 78-68.
Oh, wow. So not a blowout, but you're thinking that's kind of decisive. I think it's going to be some points in this game. I definitely think I think it's going to be more of an offensive game. Both of these teams are very good offensively. The Connecticut's better offensively than people realize if you look at their numbers. And we know what Kentucky can do on the inside and with their athleticism. Well, Javon, thanks for joining me, joining the program. Looking forward to a great game, and enjoy the game.
All right, no problem. Thanks for letting me come on again.
All right, take it easy. Javon Alford likes UConn. I'm surprised, not that he likes UConn, but I'm surprised that he likes him by 10 points, to be honest with you. I like UConn as well, but I like him 70, 74-71. Like, I think it's going to be a very close game. There'll be more offense than what you think. There'll be more offense than what people think. Both these teams are good offensive teams. Both these teams. UConn makes free throws. They take, you know, they have a ton of three-point shooters, good three-point shooters. Kentucky, of course, has the inside. So I like UConn because I think their guards, I think those, the Harrison twins are going to have trouble, a lot of trouble running their offense with those, with the way Bolt Wright and Napier defend. Bolt Wright and Napier have just destroyed offenses. I mean, Michigan State, a great offensive team, very efficient, was completely taken out of their offense by those two. Florida, again, dominated by those two. Those two guards, defensively, Bolt Wright and Napier, especially Bolt Wright, have just been just disruptive people to no end. So I think those two, and I think DeAndre Daniels will make enough big shots to give UConn a win, but certainly you would not be surprised either way. So it should be a very good game. Looking forward to it. Enjoy the game, and I will see you next time on the next edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. So long.